Boris by Mussorgsky is a very, very unique opera, and it's like a sung play. And what Mussorgsky did, he tried to emulate the spoken lines, the rhythm of the lines, the dynamics, and the pitches of a spoken line. So it is actually, for a stage director, it's wonderful because it's like directing a play, because he's given the reading of the lines very much in his musical composition, in his pitches and in his dynamics and all that. All the expressions dramatically are in the music. What I would love to, don't look at Shuisky there. He starts talking to yourself. And then in my profession, you know, we get so many artists that are basically stuck into a pattern and they're scared to death and they're insecure of shifting the pattern because of what's worked for them in the past and when I hang on to it. Not Ferruccio. I love working with him. He's a great, great artist. He is a true artist of music theater. I just wanted to be that I was on the right track.
He's trying to convince himself.
Yes, and I find it ironic.
Sure.
That isn't that funny? That man, that people chose me. Yeah.
And then when he comes back, Zara.
And that's because then you prepare the laugh better.
Sure.
Boris is theater in music. And the emotion, therefore, the emotions that this character has to live in these 40 minutes of singing, it's a universe. I mean, you have the one of the most powerful men on earth at a time on stage. You have a devoted father. You have the politician when it comes to the fight, the duet with Shuisky, leading into the beginning of the madness. And then the mad scene and the death. I mean, all this in 40 minutes, it's a mastodontic piece of theater. Of this character is the fact that you have the chance to show also the human aspect of this man when he's trying to be close to the young daughter who just lost the fiancé, and the father proud of the boy when he's showing how well he learned geography and this and that. Then, at the very end, for instance, when he's trying to give the last instructions to Fyodor before dying, and here it's a fantastic possibility that you have to show also the human aspect of this man.
Ich sehe der Ordner.
other side, when it comes to do it with Shuisky, I love it. I mean, you have really the chance to become suddenly the Tartarian prince, if you want, brutal and rough and violent. It's a good game of, it's a good combination of emotions, I must say.
When Ferruccio texts you, could you text me the way you did?
No.
You have a little tendency of pulling your head back this way. I would love it if you got to, if you do it this way. I just, and so you have,
I got my head out, but you wanted me, so it's more of
that. Like, yeah, that.
I was doing that.
No, no, you pulled back.
Yeah.
Perfect. No, because
the apartment scene is an incredible scene for me with Ferruccio, because Mr. Furlanetto is an amazing actor. And with both of us together, we really have clicked. And it's so wonderful that we have this thing together, because we were able to keep this intensity. That is really amazing for me. I don't know if it's reading into the theater, but it's amazing to me. When he grabs me, I swear the air is, I every time he does it, I go, oh! Because it's not that he's hurting me, it's just it's so exciting that I actually feel it. His goal in this opera, as I would say his goal, is to eventually take over from Boris, take over being Tsar, and right from the beginning. And he's always playing up to Boris as his best, sort of like Iago with Otello. And he's always playing up to him as, oh, I think you're wonderful. Everybody thinks you're great. And I just, meanwhile, behind his back, he's conspiring to get rid of him. And he's always putting things and telling him things that get him more and more upset. And it's really Shuisky's fault for the reason that Boris has a heart attack at the end and dies.
Spirit, but he is open, no scare about power of Boris, and that's make for me this role very interesting. From libretto, I understood enough from this role. Just I can say that what you read, it's something else. What you can, try to say by yourself on the stage, that this role will be not just. Talking to the people, not just from how somebody say in history or something, but how you bring this person on the stage, how you say what you understand from this, and how I said it's very exciting, but in the same time it's really challenge for me, because it's for a young person like me to show old guy on the stage with huge experience. It's not so easy.
I'm an interesting fellow because he grew up in the world of the cloisters and the monasteries and with monks, and so he's led a very sheltered life, and the flip side of that is his ambition to go out there and participate in life and be a part of the feasts and sit with the royalty. And there's a moment in the monastery in my first scene where Dmitri puts it all together, where he can see how he can begin his ascent to the throne and how he can exact vengeance on Boris. And it, you know, it's funny, it's just a few lines, but it's like the moment when the light comes on and he says, you know, you're going to pay for your sin.
Funny and not funny in the same time, dramatic, comic. The Varlam is a monk in the past, but he is not that, you know, religious person that to be in the monastery for the rest of his life. Of course, he escaped from there, but in that time was only opportunity to travel around, to be a monk who collect money for some monasteries of the or the churches. So he's with his companion, Father Misail. I mean, Father would be, of course, it's the fake, of course, would be fake. And Varlam, Father Varlam would be fake either. But that time was kind of homeless people, they could pretend to be a monk. So here we have this character, monk, pretend to be a monk, and of course this is a lot of humor in this character for me.
Thank you.
working with the Russian conductor, with Valeri, yes, it's intimidating, because even when he speaks in English to us or gives us directions, or when he quotes our lines, it's so authentic and it sounds so different than me or Alan or any of the other guys. And so there's a little built-in challenge to wanting perfection and wanting to have the language be just right, and also to have the helping hand of somebody that really knows and understands the phrasing of the language and how it all fits together, what words are emphasized. And no, I think it's a big help having him on our team.
The music of Boris is very Russian in a number of ways. One of the probably more obvious ways is that it uses so much of the folk idiom, either quoting directly, as in the chorus in the very first scene, in the prologue actually, the coronation scene, of Slava, glory to Boris, or in stylized elements, where Mussorgsky, of course, writes his own melody, but it's stylized on the folk songs. And that immediately has the Russian flavor. What makes the music national? Why, when we listen to Dvorak, it immediately sounds Czech? Why, when we listen to Enigma Variations of Elgar, it sounds immediately English? That's extremely difficult to put the finger down. Upon. However, there are indeed elements of modes, which is the scale on which a certain melody could be based, which immediately begins to sound like a Russian folk tune. And some of it could be comical, some of it could be tragic, some of it is sad, some of it is very ironic. Like, for example, in the Inn scene, there are a couple of songs which are very much a comedy, suddenly in the middle of this dramatic work. Also, of course, there are religious elements here. There is a wonderful element in this whole opera that the listeners, I think, could relate to very much, of the Russian religious chorales and all of this mysticism. The roughness of this score, I think, is quite miraculous, because that's what makes it Mussorgsky. That's what makes it the original maverick, as I call him, really a maverick composer, that he was. That primeval, sometimes wild, and yet sometimes incredibly beautiful and sensuous. I mean, the contrasts, and that, I think, is what people will find when they come to see this production and to hear this music. The music is so glorious because there are contrasts all the time.
One. Здравствуй, здравствуй, Юрий.
This is a very heavily involved choral piece, absolutely. The chorus is enormous, and Todd and I, the chorus master, Timothy Todd Simmons, he and I talked quite a bit on the phone and over the weeks in preparation of the for this chorus, and of course I worked with them also quite a lot.
Pilgrim's offstage singing appeared very soft last night. And I think that's because, like, half of you weren't singing it because of the costume change, right?
Yep.
Okay, so do you know now how quick that change is? Okay. And I don't know if it's...
To prepare for this opera, of course, you have to understand the great tradition of all of the choruses, and particularly the male voices in choral tradition of Russia.
The men come over and they can sing. I don't know how you need to do it, but whatever you need to do, be there to sing.
Do you want the ladies?
In preparing for this, you have to, number one, prepare for the Russian, and number two, be able to explain that to 80 people who are sitting in the chorus, the majority of whom who have never sung a word in Russian ever. And there is a lot of rehearsal for them to get used to the language specifically, because the music, although it's not easy, it's not terribly complicated choral writing for them, but the Russian makes it a whole new ballgame. And so we spend a lot of time focusing on the pronunciation, how to make the words legitimate, and to try to sound as much Russian, as authentic as we possibly could. When you sing a Verdi opera, there's a specific kind of sound that you always are working for. This specific kind of music, the style of this music, the language of this music, everything about it was a new thing to most people in the group. And there's 80 in this group, and I would say that probably 70 of them had no clue about Russian, and they. Or about the style of the music. And it was a real learning experience. I think people are excited about learning new things, and they're excited about pushing themselves in a new direction.
They're very responsive, very disciplined, and they act well. They look very Russian, I think.
The whole story of the real Boris is fascinating. The fact that he was the first Tatar prince who became a boyar in Russia. And this period of the Russian history is quite unique, because it was very primitive. When you compared it to even when Poland, because the Polish royalty and all that, they were very Frenchified. They kind of based their courts on Versailles and on the French court etiquette and all that stuff. Whereas actually the Russia at that time was very primitive. And I always recommend people to get the two parts of the Eisenstein's, you know, and The Terrible, the two films. It's so wonderful to see that and see that particular period, how Ivan then unified Russia. So I did a lot of work on the Russian background, too, and also the Russian Orthodox Christianity as difference to the Catholicism. And that's why in the other version, when you have Rangoni as a major character, the Catholic priest in Poland, who wants to manipulate politically that false Dmitry marries Marina so that Catholics can get into Russia and convert all the Russian Orthodox into Catholicism. So very rich, very rich. Historically, character-wise, it's an unbelievable opera.
Yeah. Perfect.